Yes.
Thank you. Now, oh yeah, look at that. You can get a light. Get this out of the way.
For you.
First gear.
First gear it is.
In the beginning, in my very first memory, there was music. I can still hear it. You put the lime in the coconut and shake it all up. That was playing on the AM radio in the green Oldsmobile and the building top I saw looking up out of the back seat has long since been torn down to make room for others. That memory right there has stood the test of time as the start of a love that has yet to be paralleled by any single person, philosophy, or dream that I could conjure up in my still lacking imagination. From that moment on, I sought out where the sound was coming from, what the name of the song was, and the musicians' names who played on it. At 3 or 4, I had myself a sad little record player, and my folks had plenty of fuel around the house for me to keep the arsenal of sound loading and firing at all hours of the day into night. All kinds of music, all kinds of styles, all kinds of records. Big ones, little ones, 33s, 45s, hell, even 78s spun until the sun came up. And there I was on the floor with my favorite toy, the music maker. I could still see the labels as clear as a photograph on some of those old 45s, the yellow ones, black ones, red ones, and all those names of all those players like Fats Domino and Buddy May, Oscar Peterson, the Four Sons, the Crew Cuts, Dave Brubeck doing the Bossa Nova, Dwayne Eddy and his twangy guitar, Les Brown and his band Renowned, who still to this day has the coolest rendition of Caravan ever recorded. And Tennessee Ernie Ford, the Four Aces, the Letterman, hell, even Sonny and Cher. And I took care of them all. They were mine to protect. When the electrical cord on my sad little record player finally gave out and I was told not to use it anymore for fear of me being electrocuted, I still did, sneaking downstairs and risking it all to plug that thing into the wall by the big meat freezer. And that was when I received my very first experience of what electricity feels like rushing through a 5-year-old body. It's kind of what it was like. And for a while, the music stopped. And I was lost. All those records and nothing to play them on, since I was not quite old enough at that point to be allowed to touch the big console stereo upstairs. But it came not long after that. It must have been a Christmas gift, a new RCA record player, and of all things, it had separate speakers. Two speakers with wires that plugged into the back of it, and to me, it sounded good. I had the Cadillac of record players, and I didn't waste a moment to pop the spindle on that thing and pull out all the 45s and resume my music playing at now even a louder level and cleaner and with no fear whatsoever of getting the shit shocked out of me by doing the one thing I figured could never get better. And the years have blurred the distinction of which year it was, be it that year or the following one, but I found that it did get better. That what I loved to do so much could be saved in a particular order and played back whenever I wanted to hear it. Yeah. That was the year my dad got me my first portable cassette recorder with a microphone even. And then I was set. I was on my way. I had all the tools I needed to be exactly what I imagined I always would be in between playing all those records. I was to be a disc jockey. Just like John Records Landecker, Uncle Larry and Little Tommy with their animal stories. And the few years to follow were comprised of exactly that. Me there on the floor, Mr. DJ with recorder and record player, discovering the deeper I dug into the large collection of records my dad had, the more I liked that crazy jazz stuff he had. Names that were virtually unknown then and are non-existent nowadays, like Ray Anthony, Syl Austin, Buddy Morrow, a tune called DC7 by a group who I don't even recall the name of, let alone my dad or anyone else, or a version of Flying Home, which I recorded and proudly played to my befuddled friend's stairs. Dude, what the hell's that, man? The radio was also my friend. Again, I never had a good one until way later, but I had a room full of alarm clock radios, and I'd get them all on the same radio station in different corners of the room and crank them all up at the same time. And once I began to understand how sound worked, I got clever and hooked additional speakers up, and once found that one of the radios had really good high end and the other had really good low end, so why could it hurt to hook them all up to the same speakers that I installed in a cardboard box? Sounded great for a few seconds and one less radio. Naturally, I didn't know much about electronics as I needed to. And my experimenting continued without a glitch, although I still don't think to this day I ever fessed up to exactly why that one clock radio didn't work anymore. The AM radio back then in the mid-70s played what would be laughed at today, rock and roll and disco together. What? Could it be? Yeah, one minute my life was really simple. Listening to Love Roller Coaster on Down, and suddenly I heard that voice. The voice that frightened me. The voice of Jim Morrison. The voice which to my youthful ears sounded so old, so different than anyone else on the radio, and it all changed right there. The immense charge of voltage came late one night when the radio station played the long version of Light My Fire. I had no idea there was that much to that song or others, such as the long version of Manfred Mann's Blinded by the Light. A roundabout from Yes. And I knew then that I'd been getting ripped off, man. That I'd been getting hacked up versions of music, unlike the 7 to 10 minute versions of some of the jazz stuff that I loved for their length and madness on the records that I'd worn out that my dad had. And that's when I made a decision that would echo through the rest of my life. I wanted to buy my own records, to start my own collection of music that I liked. Records that were not touched by radio stations and their need to hack the center out of songs like a bread sandwich. I wanted that guitar solo of Robbie Krieger, the keys of Ray Manzarek, the uncut version of Carry On Wayward Son by Kansas. And that's exactly what I got for my next birthday, my very first, my very own Two for the Show, the live album from Kansas. And it was heaven on vinyl, and I still have it to this day, retired, packed away neatly. From there, it was Double Vision from Foreigner, all the extra garbage cans I had to clean to earn that $7 to buy Pieces of Eight from Styx, Double Live Gonzo from The Nuge, which I never played when my folks were home due to its content, such as Wang Dang, Sweet Poon Tang, which would have had me taking it right back to the store where I bought it from. Or You Get What You Play For, the live album from REO Speedwagon. Yeah, I like that live stuff. And the more records that came with it, the better, because I could sweat the caked powder that I used to put on my face while pretending to be Ace Frehley of Kiss and tear my fingers up playing Tennis Racket Guitar Longer, because most of the live albums were double albums. And now, still all these years later, I have a much better turntable. I still make my weekly trip to the record store, and occasionally down to Alate Books and Music in Hobart, Indiana, to where there's A damn good record collection. And I still tend to my records with as much childlike amazement as I did back then. In the beginning, there was music. At the end, second gear.
Baroque.
Baroque.
It's interesting. Why are you doing that?
Say, if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it.
I gotta remember that.
Anybody easily offended here?
Not at all.
Tough shit. Just the other night, I went to Rayanne's House of Repute looking for a hand job and to score me some toot. Once inside those golden doors, I was hit by surprise, cause there was my old girlfriend who was dressed up in disguise. She took me to an upstairs room and acts as if she don't know me. And there she drops down to her knees and says she's gonna blow me. Once she started on me, I remembered once what she said. She said she'd rather die 1,000 deaths than give somebody head. Then I blew it to her and she smiled without a choke, and I tossed her a $50 bill and told her, hey, go get me some coke. She left and I laid on the bed, then the door opened up again, and there stood a 4-foot hooker hand in hand with my Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben, I said, just what the hell do you think you're doing here? He said, I took a wrong turn going to the liquor store to get myself some beer. They left and closed the door, but it opened up once more, and I'll be damned, it was Grandpa John with a big old 6-foot whore. She was shocked, but he was more, and he swallowed all his chaw. He cut a fart and turned around and puked right in the hall. Well, someone came to clean it up, and as she swayed her mop, she turned to me with a cold, dark stare and accused me of being a cop. I told her, that's funny, because you see, I'm a regular in this place, and without a word, she dropped her mop and sat right on my face. She went to town and was smothering me, and as she yelled, oh, God, I thought that I was gonna die until someone grabbed my rod. Well, she blew her load all on my face, and I threw her on the floor, and that's when I saw the hand on my pecker was my Aunt Maureen with a blonde male whore. And she scolded me as if she had a right, and I thought, this must be a joke. So I got up to leave and remembered that I still hadn't gotten my coke. Going down the stairs, I decided that I just didn't give two shits. And from behind me, I hear a voice say, why don't you do a line off my tits? I told her that I'd had enough and for now that I'd have to pass. But give me my blow and when I come back, I'll do a line off your ass. So I walked the door and saw my mom dressed as a hooker clown, and I freaked, and then I woke up in my bathtub again, almost nearly drowned. Hi, how the hell are you doing?
Very good.
That's almost caliber of what we got here for you tonight. Just little things. Yeah, I grew up in this area of the country anyway, in Lowell. And I was a member. You guys heard Night Rock's back on the air. Does anybody remember Night Rock when it was originally on?
What year was that? 79
to 82.
I was definitely too young. Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you what, Night Rock changed my life.
It was happening.
I got turned on to music on that I'd never heard before, nor I never would have. And because of the influence of that show, I'd always wanted to be a DJ, from the first poem when I was a little kid. And hearing that show and being turned on to the music that that I was, it just resonated. And eventually down the line in 94, 95, I actually got a job at that same radio station, the Crown Point station. And I was doing overnights, and they said, well, we want to do something different for overnights. We want to do like an alternative show. And I'm like, nah, let's bring Night Rock back, man. They were like, Night Rock? What's that? These guys were like from some other part of the country, so they had no idea
what the hell it was.
I was too young. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I loved it, too.
Yeah, you missed a great thing. So they let me do that, and I think I did a pretty bang-up job, and I did it for a year and a half or so, and then I had to go. But it's good to see it's back on the air, and this kind of relates to that. It's called Wonder Whatever Became of Me. I'm sitting at the bar across the street playing video trivia, NTN. And my ears perk up as I hear the table of guys behind me, a group of standard blue-collar bowling guys, start to speak of WKRP in Cincinnati.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
In particular, the episode where Dr. Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap have a cop in the studio and they're drinking as an example of how alcohol affects people when it comes to reaction time and driving. Anybody remember that episode?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And they're laughing and they're cutting it up. And then me, I turn around and I said to him, Dr. Johnny Fever fucked up my life. This statement to them apparently was so obviously unexpected and hilarious that they laughed so hard for so long that I never had the opportunity to explain to them why. You obviously know why. Because I like Dr. Johnny Fever.
About the episode with Phone Cop.
What's that?
The Phone Cop. The episode of Bomb.
Yeah. Heard Les Nessman thinking turkeys would fly. Yeah. That was cool. This is The Green Pool of Evil Reincarnate. It's a poolside middle of the night escape from the thought-searing walls and TV. The VCR is set in recording, so I'm not missing anything I can't see later. Silence and glow green come from the water, and headlights creep far through the trees, but not to come near to me. Those long gone now summer days here, where the water was warm enough to take an evening's dip, have passed, but still the cool night air refreshes the fall spirit of things. The poolside table I sit at is dusty with the remains of steak seasoning, sandy and smelling like what missed a long since eaten steak, yet that smell is nearly sickening. So I move to a different table. That's fine. The other one shook too much anyway. It's Sunday night, not a soul in sight, but sounds. The waterfall, the rumble of a muffler now and then. An occasional distant dog. No breeze to move the leaves all fallen in brown around and in the water. The sideways smile of the first quarter moon over the rooftop of the building before me and the ever sound endowed crickets. A closer stare at the unused pool shows a layer of scum on the surface that swirls slowly like a cauldron of green evil awaiting a meal of a child or small furry animal. Not moving, I sit, sipping yet another beer, smoking, listening, watching the entire encompassing evening evolving around me. So slow not to even notice a change. Yeah, these are my peaceful times, my favorite of all. No people around to ruin the air and all its particles of pure silence under a starry sky. These are the times I strive for to slip away unnoticed, no one knowing that I'm here with my beer, doing what makes my mind slow down. And a stray walker strolls by. Some headlights race past, knowing they cannot be late even on the last night of the weekend. And a caller approaches through the oil barren gate to phone in his drug order, oblivious to my presence so far. And they always seem surprised to see me here scribbling down what they hope isn't their every move. I think to them, don't worry, man. I have much better things to write about than you, who is either too cheap or too poor to buy your own phone, no sympathy or empathy at all. I'm only here for the sound show. That's my gig. Soaking in the autumn leaves, which even in the night's lack of light appears red off the glare of the streetlights. And upon closer inspection of the pool after a piss in the woods, the scum swirling on top of the water is not translucent. It's all white, a fuzz or cream coagulating in slimy circles. And closer up, the evil growing green is creepier than words. Things of dreams and evil games of other planes of existence. So much for swimming, even if it was 70 degrees. The cement suits my seating just fine. A couple slip out of the building, and I find it odd since I didn't see them go in. And I cringe. Seems the batteries in my book light have had it, which in turn makes me close the book on the dark of this evening and fall into the cool, calm cold of a southern November night under the stars next to the green pool of evil reincarnate, alone and satisfied. Oh boy, I got a stack of shit here tonight. I have to keep an eye on the time, too. What time did we start? Oh, Beetle wanted me to do this one. I didn't want to do this one. Where is he?
Right here.
There you are.
I gotta see what it is.
You know what it is.
I think I do, but let me take a look.
That one.
Oh, yeah.
Does he almost like look that like one meatloaf a lot. Or what?
Meatloaf?
Is he almost in white?
No,
he looks nothing like
Beetle. No. He looks like Beetle to me. It's called Pissed.
Parentheses,
thank you. Some of the places I've. Countless 20-ounce pop bottles. Filled a few of them, too. In an elevator. I'd just gotten fired from another radio gig. Behind my truck at work. Too long a walk back to the terminal building. Off river bridges, which is best at night for the sound effect. Off a number of second floor balconies. Too drunk to care to go inside. 118th story balcony. Just to say I did. On the side of a bank in Florida. Immediately followed by a wrenching drunken puke. And little did I know, a cop watched the entire episode, and a good thing it was, my driver was sober. Out the back door of too many bars to count, usually preceded by another drunken, wrenching puke. In close to 12 different American rivers, plus the Atlantic, Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico. Out the front flaps of a tent once, forgetting later that I did it, barefoot too. In snow, attempting to spell eat me. Didn't matter how many beers I drank, I could never get past the T. On the front doors of my middle high school and one state capitol building, the big dream was the White House. Almost between two baggage trailers at the airport the other night where I used to work, but as soon as I whipped it out, I realized there was someone in that truck on the other side of the fence watching my every move. Out in left field during a Little League game when I was a kid, in my pants. And in hindsight, They were all quite refreshing. Except for the one time as a young man when I took one next to a bunch of cows onto an electric fence. And anyone who says the cross currents don't connect don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And my piss still glows in the dark. You want to see?
That's sad.
I've been really angry a lot in my life. I don't know if anybody ever else deals with this. I don't know. It's a mental thing. I'm angry about a lot of things. Well, life is great, but I don't know. I sometimes feel that I'm out of my own. I'm out of time. That I was born in the wrong time. I probably would have fared better in like the 1800s or 1700s, when there was less bullshit to deal with. And this is what? I'd have been standing in front of a bunch of people like Socrates and Plato and choking my verbal chicken up here without radio. Slightly twisted but still relieving. The subject of pissing. Imagine, if you will, that we actually are living in the movie Night of the Living Dead. The zombies are the conforming, blind, faithing, stupid, and self-righteous individuals of our great American society. We can't rid ourselves of them like they did in the movie. Damn it. But we can pretend. Without moving our hands, we can imagine raising a double-barreled 10-gauge sawed-off shotgun with a still hand and blast their dumb fucking brains out. And from this thought, we can get a touch of satisfaction out of the blast of imaginary bliss while at the same time knowing that is all we get. We cannot actually do it. And this, my friends, is the difference between the common pissed off, realistic person and the common vigilante. Thank you. Thanks, you guys. Perfect. A couple of soft-hearted things. After that, why not? Third gear. It's called Thanks, Ian. You know, I think Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull put it very well. Life's a long song. And perhaps that's why I liked art and progressive rock so much. And jazz. Because if in fact life is a long song, I want a song that changes and has wonderfully obscure bridges where the chorus isn't always the same two times in a row. I want a song that builds up to a dizzying, nerve-tweaking height that has a breakdown with a soothing coda. I want a song that isn't boringly repetitive. I want a song that has lyrics that are not only thought-provoking but also beautiful. And I want a song that you can listen to over and over and over again and never get tired of it, always hearing something different in it than the day before. Life's a long song. Don't let someone else who could care less about you write yours for you. The duet is the best. Someone inspired me to write that.
I wonder who.
She's here. And this, same thing. It's called Stirred. If I were to ever fall into the sea and take to the water, I'd want you with me. If the sun were to fade and the planets collide, I'd walk in the chaos with you by my side. If I could fly in the sky while I sing, I'd want your harmony my next door wing. If the masses went mad and the goal of peace died, We would find shelter together, we'd hide. If on this lone eve I am faced with my death, I will be smiling before my last breath, just knowing you are alive. Well, don't worry, I'm gonna fuck that up right now.
Every time.
Obviously, there's a few writers in here, yes. One, two, okay. I'll do this one here. Not at the moment. Sure. Yeah, I could use some. Yeah, do it up. I sit down this morning and begin penning away as I usually do, and I imagine I'm not the only one. I picture many others on this 22-degree North Carolina morn scratching away in their books, be it spiral, hardbound, notepad, or keyboard, safe and warm. Some call it a journal, some call it a diary, to others such as I who like to avoid the obvious, although it is, call it a writing book. Call it what you will, it's a literary chill pill. Sometimes those who spend their free time writing have to face being poked fun at, which is surely a shortage of thoughtful words on the poker's part. Some of those who don't write have started a stigma concerning such a habit, and you've probably heard the sarcastic remarks, "Hey, you keeping a journal?" Or, "Dear diary." Sometimes they think they're being clever and they ask, "Hey man, are you writing a novel?" My best reply is, "Not at the moment," which seems to hold them off long enough to finish writing my sentence. And this applies especially to men. Some men have no idea what the hell to say to a guy at the corner of the bar, bound book, wide open, nonstop pen, eyes fixed on the page, so in their ignorance they poke fun at the writing man. In their feeble, thoughtless little minds, they only have one reference, and that is to the teenage girls who write about who they like this week and the Encompassing Feelings Incorporated. And I suppose if I had any feelings, I might write about them, but I usually don't. And sometimes when attacked for my habit, I'm found writing about the attacker, who so stupidly called me out to account for my words, and 9 times out of 10 I ignore the fools not interested in a bar fight. I don't think they take too highly to the fact that the words are about them. Jerk, moron, fucking asshole. So I turn back inside to the view of the outside and do what I've done since 7th grade, the master observer, contemplator, ponderer, poet, and thief of time, and this I do for no one but myself, and to miss a day of what went down as a self-induced crime. To miss a day means a year later I have stolen a moment's reading from myself. I have sacrificed a portion of my life for whatever endeavor that seemed more important at the time, all of which were fruitless in the face of personal history. But maybe, just maybe, the whole thing is a big lie. Perhaps my love is not for writing, but instead killing time. Much better than a beer at a bar with boring conversation with a ball game. An excuse to be alone in a world of so many people that it's nearly impossible to be so, just maybe. But no matter why, right now, as always should be, it's much better to just do it than question why it's possible. Fuck the hacks that heckle. Who needs them anyway? I'd much rather be fixated with fine point than hear what they gotta say, because I'm a writer, and you may be too. We get a thrill out of telling what we know or once knew. Yeah, man, this is what we do. You got a problem with that?
Take it.
Oh, thanks. This is a request. There have been many a night where I awake to the calm of 4 a.m. and feel my way down the halls to the can in the dark without my glasses on. And on most of them nights, while sitting on the can and doing my thing, I'll rest my elbows on my legs and doze back off halfway through the download. And I'll awake anywhere from 1 to 30 minutes later, one or both of, or three of my legs completely falling asleep, and half the time not remember sitting down in the first place. Done or not, I usually collect myself and feel my way back down the dark hallway without glasses on to the bed. And what I find really astounding about this is never once yet have I ever fallen off while asleep on the throne. All right. Smoke break. Take a pause. All right.
I'll be right back.
Look over there. Oh, look at that.
You guys put a trumpet. Should have mixed it with the water.
Look at that, runaway. Bukowski's Radio. It stayed on the same station constantly. One of those Los Angeles public radio classical music stations, which makes sense, because I can't imagine Hank tolerating endless commercials. It was the shotgun rider through all those years of writing. It outlasted the manual typer and electric. I can see his hand reaching over and turning it up a bit whenever Wagner or Mahler came on. It was one tough radio. Having survived numerous launches through second floor windows onto the roof. The panes of the window were replaced, but Bukowski's radio played on. Full orchestras pounding, piano concertos plinking, egging him on to play just one more piece on the keys before setting the last poem typed neatly aside and going to bed. Just in case he died while he was asleep, they know the very last thing he wrote. And I wonder if Linda Lee kept that radio. I wonder if she ever turned it on against the time since he's passed. It would be completely appropriate if she didn't. Bukowski's radio would never sound the same without the accompaniment of his hands orchestrating the tapping symphony nearby. Mm. Anybody familiar with Charles Bukowski in the room?
Yeah.
One. Mike? Anybody else? Post Office was his very first novel. If you're going to start with Bukowski, and I highly suggest it for any writers, start with the novel Ham on Rye.
That novel rocks.
Poetry, war all the time, short story books. What the hell was the title? Something Ejaculations and other something, I don't know. I've had many different names in my life, and I'm not sure why at the moment. Along the way, people have just given me names, and they stuck. Or, for some insane reason, perhaps it has to do with being a writer. I've coined a few of them myself. In high school, I was Cholo, which was given to me by Steve Metz, or Jello was his nickname, who was in my band Rat's Ass. I got a lump on my ass, a big fucking lump on my ass. That was one of our songs, I got a lump on my ass. We were a punk band. And so be nature, you know, we did that. So I got a big fucking lump on my ass with a 4-inch hair sticking right out of the middle of it. Who knew years later I'd end up with pilonidal cysts? Somebody's obviously had those. It's a pain in the ass, literally. Cholo came from a song by the punk band The Dickies. Then, in college, or trade school, actually, where I went in Lauderdale for radio, I was tagged with the name Sid Malicious. Sid, at first, came from this asshole who I can't remember his name. I was still listening to a lot of the punk rock real heavily at 19 years old, and was clueless, and he, rather, was clueless about the music. So anything with an edge to it, to him, was acid rock. So he started calling me Acid. And somehow it got shortened to Sid. And of course, came the onslaught of questions. Do you got any, man? Jay, or Cheetah, or Junior, who's another friend of mine, who I met actually there in school, he was the one who lengthened the name to Sid Malicious. And they tell me I was a wicked practical joker back in the day, although I don't really remember it because Cheetah was the one that turned me on to Jack Daniels. And I contemplated using the name Sid as my radio name, being I was in school for broadcasting at the time, and one of my teachers insisted that I did not use the name Sid. She said it made me sound like an old Jewish man. I told her, it's spelled S-Y-D, not S-I-D. And she said, people can't see spelling over the radio. So on my first real radio job, I was left without a name. Moments before going on the air live for the very first time ever, the program director was announcing me and turned around with a stunned look on his face, being he had no idea what name I was to use on the air. And at that instance, all I could think of was having a big glass of Jack Daniels and Coke to calm my nerves, and out it came. Daniels. Jeff Daniels. And it stuck through the first leg of my radio career. The second leg came after some crazy life turns. I wanted to leave Daniels behind, and that's when some chick told me, since I was a Sagittarian, I should use Archer. Poof! I was suddenly Jeff Archer. That stuck through the second leg of my radio career until I officially retired. Long story on the whole retirement thing. We'll skip that. During the second leg, I began writing with serious intentions. My pen name started as Jeff Archer. Then it switched to Jeff Goodrock. Then, based on, who's the guy that does one of the voices on The Simpsons? Hank Azaria. I saw the name Azaria while I was baked one night watching The Simpsons, and I thought, well, let me take the I out of there. Archer Azara. Then Jeff Azara. But everyone who saw the name on paper wanted to pronounce the AR in the center like car instead of air. So I tried putting a little dash above the A in the center to no avail. Then I heard the comment, Azera, that's funny, you don't look Mexican. And when I got into internet, I found out that Azera is truly a Mexican-based name. Then I heard the comment, the third leg of my radio career came and my demo tape still claimed to be Jeff Archer. Archer had to go. Another banishing of bad from the past. I suggested to the program director, who I still presently work for, that I wanted to use a different name. And I tossed out a couple at him, and he didn't like them. Then it came. Hell, I might as well use a name that fits my personality, my lung and clothing color. Boom, Jeff Black is born. Just when I think I'm finally settled on my identity, I go to the local bar one day, and upon arriving in Madison, I find NTN Trivia. I had to come up with a nickname for the game in order to play. The first thing that came to mind was spelled U-P-H-R-A-S. U-P-H-U-P-R. But I changed my mind, being the jazz music lover I was, and tried to use J-A-Z-Z, but it was already taken, so I killed a Z, and voila! I became known to all the regulars in the bar across the street from where I live as Jazz. And I still am. I don't bother to correct them. My bar tab still says Jazz. I am the one everybody dreads to compete with on the music trivia games. All in all, I've tried to keep the name thing under control nowadays. I write under the name Jeff Black, Radio The Works. Through all this, I've been asked the questions a few times. Dude, why don't you use your real name? My answer is as simple as this. No one would believe me if I told them my real name was Joe King. This is a hot one. Spinner. It's hard to remember how the whole thing came to be, but I ended up in a bar where the bar itself was in a complete circle and the whole damn thing rotated. The barkeep stayed in place in the center, but we slowly spun around them. Regardless of how slow it went, it still fucked with your head when you're both high and drunk. So there I was with an older woman, me 21 years old or so. She said she was in her early 50s, but somehow I knew she was pushing 60 or older. And we drank and spun and drank and spun and drank and spun until we decided to go back to my little apartment. Sure enough, we fucked. I gave her one of those big stinky mule fucks, and suddenly she looked up at me while I was going at it and said, I can't believe I'm getting fucked by the famous radio guy Joe King. I do remember I never went back to that rotating bar again. The motion messed with your equilibrium and it made you do stupid shit like fucking a 60-year-old broad and liking it. I never saw her again after that night, and she must have obviously been as dizzy as I was. Oh, yeah. Oh. Me and my checkered past, man. Have you ever heard that before?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Jones.
Okay. Good. In 96, I discovered these things here. You get them at Borders. Borders Press makes them. They're big hardcover writing books. I worked for Borders, Walden Books, for a lot of years and managed a lot of bookstores. And these are beautiful things because you got a lot of room to write. Look at that, a Night Rock sticker. But they're beautiful things, and I've filled 36 of them so far, about 100 pages a piece. What is that, 3,600?
Since
they're shit, man. Look, cool.
When you get them, are they lined?
They're all, yeah, they're line pages. But they're a good thing because it gives you a lot of room to do what you want to do, and it's a good thing. And I tell you that because when I found these books, I'd written intermittently throughout my life, and something happened in 96 where I decided once I found those, I like doing this. I love writing. I love writing what I think and feel, and this is what I love to do. Sitting on radio, and that was coming close to its end at that point. And this was the very first poem that I wrote that went into one of these books. And it was a challenge, and it was one of the most sappy-ass things I've ever written, but I think it was kind of cool because it has a moral to it. Believe it or not, I write something that has a moral to it. Fear and Grit. This is probably the... Actually, once I found Bukowski is when I started rhyming stuff, and this is before I discovered Bukowski. In my life and time, a place still close enough to see, I had spoken with a stranger who at once just took to me. I told him I was chasing who I am and who I'll be, so he sat me on the pier with smile-wrinkled eyes of sea. I was full of questions, but he would not let me speak. He said he had the answer to the wisdom that I seek. I doubted him until I watched his hand raise from his side, and he pointed to his red boat, weather-worn and patch-applied. All I saw at first was just a little wooden boat, and then he pointed closer to the front hull's painted quote. The words, they were familiar, but the quote was not so grand. "When I tell you what it means," he said, "you'll understand. For many years I lived a life where doubt became my shroud. And then I simply learned to say those three words aloud." That's what he did. He coughed like that because he smoked a lot. He said, "A soul is free to raise to splendid heights for all to see, but the lone two things that hold one down are fear and gravity." It's cold, it's cold, it's cold, it's too fucking cold, man. It's no snow, but it's cold. Maybe 10 degrees and a good wind. It's fucking cold. The kind of cold that makes doggies scratch madly at the door. The kind of cold that makes cats cling to front porch screens screaming. The kind of cold that makes the strongest nose snotty. The kind of cold that makes snowmen look for warm car hoods to lay on. The kind of cold that actually makes a bad case of blue balls go away. The kind of freaking cold that makes you wish the car windows scraped themselves. The kind of cold that farts don't even float in. It's fucking cold. It's the kind of cold that kills Floridians. The kind of cold that mittens flip the bird to all by themselves. And here I stand out in it with nothing but a loincloth on, realizing I picked a real fucking bad night to play Tarzan and Jane with a neighbor lady. This is the missers. Wow. Quit smoking. I see them, you see them, we all see them. The ones who have that look in their eyes. The ones who believed in the tale. They grew up believing in the myth of the soulmate and spent their whole lives waiting for theirs, and they are either now dead or dead and still alive, waiting. Alone. I see them, you see them, we all see them. The ones with that look in their eyes, the ones who believed and somehow, some way, fell onto a shard of luck that has kept the myth of the soulmate alive, and they are alive, looking at their perfect counterpart, looking that look which so many of us are envious of. I see them, you see them, we all see them. The ones who are not alone, but have settled for something is better than dying alone, waiting with the look in their eyes of the dead, because the myth of the mate has murdered their soul. I see them, you see them, we all see them, brushing their teeth, combing their hair, shaving, putting on makeup, or walking down the street, wanting to look away, finding it hard not to stare. I thought it got fucking dark in here all of a sudden.
Just wrecked the place.
I burned it up.
I think so. Did I do that?
That's all right. I'm used to having it up here, so that's just cool with me. I keep telling myself that I need to get back to writing about some other subject than my woman. For instance, the turning color of autumn leaves, or a good hearty all-night boozing session, or the best sleep I've ever gotten in years, or the fond memory of a recent road trip. I could write about things I used to write about, like how society at large in America is suffering from bad case of cranial rectumitis, or inane wars that our government is taunting, saying it's in the name of homeland security, peace and liberty, when we all know it's all over power, greed, and fucking oil.
Right.
I feel you, man.
Plus all the views of turning leaves, worth noting, were seen with her. And all night drinking sessions have been drank with her. And the best sleep I've ever had has been next to her. And the most recent notable road trip was taken with her. And I have to ask, am I softening?
A little bit.
Well, if I am, fuck it! Life is short, and I've spent plenty of time already on subjects I hate. And if writing about the best things in life has to offer makes me less of a writer, and you don't want to read me because you are brainwashed with the crime and gore of modern-day television and its proliferation of human degradation and are lame enough to never miss an episode of the ongoing fucking Survivor phenomenon, I say, go fuck yourself with your TV, because that's all the better sex you'll ever get, so long as you're its willing fuck for free whore.
Fuck yourself with your TV.
I've been a squirrel watcher for most of my life. I've always been amazed by squirrels' agility, their audacity to leap without care from one branch to the other, from tree to tree, bowing a limb with what little weight they have, and never slowing down to think twice about how close they just came to wiping out for good. And I must say, I used to think there was one and only one thing I've never seen a squirrel do, which is missing the destination branch and falling to the ground. Until this morning. I was sitting with a smoke and a cup of coffee, when two of them crazy critters tore across the lawn, up into the nearest tree, and began fucking. What a sight this was, for they just didn't do it in standard doggy or human style. They did it squirrel style, which was vertically facing up, vertically facing down, clinging to the bottom of branches, a little here, a little there, a little here, up there, with no care what the hell soever that they were toying with gravity in every sense. All I could do was laugh quietly as not to interrupt their 7 a.m. romp of squirrely sexual stuck work. So I finished my smoke, returned back inside, feeling nearly the same as when I went out onto the balcony in the first place, still never having seen a squirrel fall out of a tree. True story. Thank you. That's the name of the poem. The other night, I was involved in an activity which I really enjoy doing, and in an unusual place. And suddenly, my ex-wife popped into my mind. Huh? I probably shouldn't be thinking about her while I'm doing this, I thought. So, I quickly wiped my ass flush and went back to my bar stool. Miserable bastard. Sorry I'm such a miserable bastard, I said. And she said, what makes you say that? Because I'm never fully awake for you anymore. I'm grouchy and nasty and angry all the time. And I opened the bottle of cheap vodka and poured myself another. And she said, you're not a miserable bastard. You just have a shitty job that fucks you up when you try to keep normal human hours on your days off. The human body was not meant to function officially on a nocturnal situation on a regular basis. So I finished my glass before she ended her sentence, poured myself another one, took my clothes off, then hers, then turned a hot water shower on, glad that at least a few things still function properly. Yeah. I told her, the same person, the tigers came and they ate my brain. She said, what? The tigers. The brain tigers. She took a bite from her trout sandwich and asked, what the shit are you talking about, man? I said, see, I don't know, because the tigers came and ate my brain. She finished her sandwich as I stared at the wall, then grabbed up my bags and headed for the door, or she did, and on their way out, she said, remind me never to take you to the zoo while you're tripping again. We hadn't gone to the zoo together, ever. The door banged. The tigers came. They ate my brain. The tigers. I have no idea.
What's acid?
I realized my greatest fear. I'm not sure where or when it finally showed itself to me, but it has. And oddly enough, it's the same thing I've always had a fear of, but only in a refined, more distinct product. You see, my greatest fear is becoming that guy. The guy over there at the corner stool of any given bar on any given day or night, all by himself. He's broken, alone, usually with kids out there in the world and an ex-wife that insists and is supported by law that he works 70 plus hours a week to support not only his kids, but all her dates with guys who will end up raping and abusing his kids, which is legal right to be. Part of their lives has been stripped of. He all tired and drunk. That guy who has no social skills beyond the weather. The one who pretends to be watching television, but is really running the last 30 years of his life over and over again in his head like some suspense movie that never ends, and he keeps hoping that the movie takes a sudden twist at the end, which puts him on a tropical island where his past is left behind, invisible to anyone who asks. You can hear the memories blast across his face on every swig of whiskey and drag off his cigarette. You can feel the reverse magnetism by how most people ignore him after all of his years of silence. There in the corner of the bar, serving a life sentence of aloneness and profound singledom with no road seeming brighter than any other. No choice being the right one, being the road chosen years back was the one where no U-turns were permitted, ever. So, my greatest fear sits a few seats down from me a couple nights a week, and it's probably a good thing because I'm not that far gone. I still have things to live for, even if it isn't the dream of most Americans with the house, car, garage, 2.5 children, and all the hellish headaches and heartbreak it all encompasses. I, too, am committing a slow suicide, just like that guy. But at least I'm comfortable with mine, and I probably always will be. That is, as long as I don't stop telling you about it.
Ooh, look at that. Almost down to the bottom of the pile. Okay, that's good. Oh. So we're going to get a pick and choose here in the last of it. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, a couple more. I'll let you get on with your night here. I'm 36 years old now. I didn't think I'd live past 35. Somewhere along my life, I had this in my mind. Actually, it was initially 27. I was like, I'll never live past 27 because all my favorites, Jimmy, Jim, Janice, almost Shannon Hoon, Kurt Cobain, they all died at 27. And I thought, I'll never live past that. And I did. But then I had to get past 35, and I did. And when I had my 35th birthday, what about this? Last month, on the 17th, of December, I turned 35 years old, and since then, I've kind of been fucked up in the head. Part of fucked upness, is that I never expected to see 35, so actually seeing 35 come seems, well, off the scale. And I've been having trouble seeing that cliché glass being half full instead of half empty. And I keep hearing in my head, shit, man, your life is officially half over now. And I keep hearing, here's where it all starts to turn to shit. And I hear my stomach bitching due to too many years of hard drinking. And I'm afraid to go to the doctor for fear of him saying that I must stop drinking and eating like hell. And I feel my lungs rattle and wheeze while I sleep, awakening to an hour of coughing, never admitting to any doctor that I'm still a pack-a-day smoker. And I suppose it'll come down to blood. That'll make me quit it all. You know, coughing or puking it up. And I hear songs on the radio that remind me of my childhood and have had to turn the songs off due to the obscene feeling of loss they give me. And I see the new lines on my face and the gray hairs in my beard, and I feel the constant aching of the joints in my hands and my trashed back. Yeah, half empty. But then I remember a couple of things. I recall that Bukowski didn't start writing poetry until he was 35, and I've been at it strong for 20 years now. And I remember 6 months ago when I met this amazing woman who keeps telling me that my life is just now starting and reminding me that I have over 700 pages of poetry written, 4 spoken word albums, a completed novel, although unpublished, and 1 jazz album that I played all the instruments to my credit, and that the sky's the limit now. And you know, she's right. All I need is a bit of refocusing of the lenses. Good timing. All I need is the people that I call my friends. All I need is the balls to endure, regardless of the slowing physical ability. All I need is a piano, a pen, a recording device, paper, beer, her, and the attitude that during this half of my life, I'm not gonna quite be the fuck up I was in the previous half. Bottoms up. Adjusting the microphone just right, I look up to see all of your eyes looking at me. Like others that have ever been at this podium, I'm sure, wondering, what do you see? And do you see me of what others have seen of you in the past? Or do you transcend the sight such as I and fade into the words as they flow past your ears? And then I ask, what brings us here? To be heard, hopefully felt. Do we have something to say that may lighten one's day, or is it all ego manifestation? And I stop for a second, look out at all of you. Then to my slightly trembling hand, which holds my perfectly typed pages. Nah, man, this is my heart and my mind, which I wish to lay bare and endure your stare, even for a couple of moments. And just like me, we all want to shine, even if it is only off the reflection of the surface of a cup of coffee. We come to these readings even for a fleeting moment of silence and attention with our love poems, our hate poems, our present and past fears, things we hold or held dear, debauchery high or loaded on beer, the quickly passing years and some tears perhaps. But all in all, we come from a stock which cannot be silenced. No matter how good or bad we sound, how clearly our thoughts have been transcribed from brain to pen to paper, young or old, we're more bold, and we always will be. For we are walking hearts in odd forms, live on a microphone, unashamed. So read on, my friends. Fearlessly in the face of those who may criticize, for you, me, we have something they don't. A working mind and the dedication of time to use it artfully. Don't you see? Words, phrases, sentences, words, phrases, sentences, words, phrases, sentences so often are like birds or butterflies. So often do I see a real good-looking creature flying, darting back and forth, diving right in front of my eyes, swooping past my face, and I smile and I say, yeah, I want that one right there. Words, phrases, sentences. And all too often, I either have no net available to snag it with, or I, for some inane reason, tell myself that I'll remember what that particular creature looks like and net it the next time it comes my way. Words, sentences, phrases, words, sentences, phrases. And you know, it never does. My apologies. Thank you. Bye.